Welcome back to another episode of The Lion Zeal Show. This is the show for SEOs and digital marketers that like to get nerdy, technical, and discuss the real strategies entrepreneurs are using to grow their businesses. I'm your host, Jarrah Rosso, and today I'm joined by Gregory Elfink.
Hey, everyone.
Said that wrong already, doesn't matter. Good start. Anyway, man, thanks for joining me. It's great to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me here. Hopefully, whatever we're about to talk about will have some value to your audience. So.
We need to pretend this is very organized and we pre-planned
this, for sure.
So do you want to start off like introducing yourself and like what you do?
So I'm Greg Elfrink, as Daryl said. I'm the head of marketing over at Empire Flippers. And what we do is we help online business owners and entrepreneurs either sell their business, we help them find that buyer, or we help people buy those digital assets. So that's more in a nutshell what we do as a company. And my personal role is I help get more traffic. I do a lot of SEO. We were just talking about paid media a little bit off camera, and copywriting, marketing automation, basically all the things. Me and my team, we're quite busy all the time trying to get more and more traffic. So
that's cool, man. So how do you balance like everything? Like that's literally every form of marketing you can think of. It's like I do all this. How do you kind of balance doing all that?
Very difficult. So the way that we do it, like I'm like infamous with my team of coming up with like these super complicated plans that like pixel ladders, like once they're in this part of the funnel, this ad starts showing to them, you know, things like that. But then I give it to someone and like, whoa, this is a lot. This is very overwhelming. So what we've done now that has been effective is I'll take like a piece of my complicated vision and then dumb it down to make it very, you know, manageable bites. And then I give it to one of my team members to go and do. And it's simple enough. It's still like, you know, a complicated piece, but it's just like one part of this bigger thing. And then they're able to go and accomplish that. Once they accomplish it, we build out the SOP for it. And then we switch on who's doing it in terms of the team. And we have the that person go out and do the next part of the vision until everything, all the puzzle pieces are more or less built. And that seems to be more effective than what I used to do with big diagrams, like this is what we're doing, everyone.
Do you have an example of how you kind of like split it up? Because
Sure. So one thing we just started doing, I've had this, I wanted to build this like kind of like Gary V content machine for a while, you know, where he's just like repurposing content everywhere, right? So this is a great example of me like showing, you know, what we need to do, and my team's like, whoa, this is too much. So just recently, the last month or so, well, I guess month and a half now, I've gotten onto Quora, and I was answering like 5 questions a day, and then I passed it to one of my new hires to write as me. I like showed him my tone of voice and all that stuff, and how to find the question. So we use like the Quora Ads Manager. We build like a dummy campaign inside of it to see how much traffic each question is getting on a monthly basis. So that way we can, you know, we're not just answering questions that don't get any viewership at all. So now that he goes out there and he answers 5 questions for me, and he built out an SOP that took it even one step further than what I was doing. And now that that's pretty much set in stone, we've handed that off to another person on our team who's doing it, and they're just rotating it while he's going out and helping me with the slide share aspect of it now. And in that month and a half or so, we've gotten over, I think it's 25 or 27,000 views from Quora, all for free.
We've had
a few people actually, now because I dived into analytics recently, so I could finally see like, oh, this person came from Quora, unlocked this business that they want to do due diligence on. And you know, that was all free. I mean, not like a huge amount of numbers, but it doesn't take that much in terms of like qualified traffic for us to make pretty decent money from that kind of strategy. So so that's an example of what we do. So now he's working on the SlideShare stuff. I'm expecting that to take about another month or so till we like kind of, you know, figure out our processes. And once that's done, we're able to take both of those processes and put them all the way back to the initial assembly line when they're actually writing the piece of content. So they can say like, oh, this would be a good part of the slide or for the SlideShare. Oh, like we should go see if there's questions on Quora related to what I'm just writing, because now we can like go repurpose that content over here. So it all comes back to that initial blog post, but slowly getting the systems rolled out is the big challenge.
That's awesome. So do you normally start like with Quora, you said you were originally posting the answers yourself. Do you normally start something yourself, then systemize it, then pass it off to someone else?
Good question. So that really depends on what it is that I'm working with. If it's like content-based, then yeah, usually I will start it because I'm fairly good at content. I know what I'm doing. If it's technical, then I my second command, he usually starts it, and then I have him pass it off. So he's kind of like my yin to my yang. Between him, we're like one full stack marketer. so what we do is him and I will do it, and then we'll give it to someone. We'll watch them do it, and then we'll ask them after a while to tell us how to do it to make sure there's no communication loss. And then that person will write an SOP, and we take that SOP and pass it to someone else to see if they can do it. And if they can, then that's a successful transition of skills, right? So that's how we develop more and more intricacies within our team is through that.
Yeah, I think that's super interesting because one of the tough parts is, especially for kind of the smaller entrepreneurs that are like just running their own business, like passing and delegating things to someone else is super difficult, especially when you have a bit of an ego and you think like you're the only person in the world that can ever do this.
it can be hard, man. So my guy that I was telling you about, that's like the technical guy, very much a perfectionist, and I'm not. I am not a perfectionist. Like I mess up all the time. I just want to go out and do things. And so that was a struggle for him to like make it so where he actually like publishes something or gets something done, like instead of making it perfect, because if you make it perfect, you'll never get it done. But on the flip side, he's the one telling me like, whoa, this is a little bit too broken. Maybe we shouldn't do that. Let's slow down.
It's a good balance.
Yeah, it's a very good balance. So I think having, if you're managing a team or anything like that, if you're an entrepreneur with a team, look for that person who complements the parts where you're really, really weak. And it just works really, really well together. But yeah, that ego thing and letting go of control, that can be...
It's tough.
And you feel like you're kind of useless when you start delegating too much stuff. You're like,
what am I doing?
But you're the most like important thing because you're the linchpin of the whole system and why it's working, right?
So. Yeah. So how big was EF when you joined versus like today?
Yeah, so it was about 4 years ago when I joined, a little over 4 years ago. Okay. And we were, I think, six people. The whole company could fit into a room smaller than this like living room that we're in now. In fact, we did because your friends out there probably don't know Saigon, but you do, like, you know, Norfolk down in D1.
Yeah.
When I first came out from Alaska to Vietnam, we were in a two bedroom apartment in Norfolk, our whole company.
Wow.
So it was me and the new hire and then our co-founders and other people in our company coming in to just hang out in this living room more or less to work. But now,
that's awesome, man.
Now we're like 63 people, 63 or 64 people. Wow. So yeah, grown quite a bit.
What is changing like your responsibilities over those 4 years?
A lot.
Yes, I figured.
So I was originally hired as just like the blogger. Like I was just writing content. And as time went on, the system got more and more complicated in terms of who we need to attract. For one, our client became more complicated because instead of just targeting like a digital nomad, sometimes I'm talking to family offices and private equity, or I'm talking to, you know, entrepreneurs with a $5 million, $10 million business with very different problems than, you know, the digital nomad lifestyle business. So like that evolved, but my personal role, like I've always been good at, like I mentioned earlier, like complicated charts. I've always been good at seeing what something could be. So as we've progressed, and I've just recently been able to move myself out of content to focus on this other stuff, my role has changed from writing a blog post to now I look at marketing automation, I look at Google Analytics. I'm playing around for the first time ever with Facebook ads and Google Ads Manager. I'm getting HubSpot and analytics to like talk to each other, which is a challenge in of itself sometimes to make sense of the data you're seeing. So a lot of that kind of stuff, and start appearing on more shows, like the Lion Zeal show.
Finally.
Started speaking at conferences as well. So a bunch of different stuff from, you know, the humble blog writer to now, the role has changed quite a lot.
Yeah, I was asking because I'm curious how much kind of the marketing focus has grown and changed. Because I know you're doing like a whole bunch of things now, which you're just talking about. Was it a lot simpler back then? And like, I know you were just focused on blog content, but was there a lot of other marketing going on?
Yeah, so the TLDR is no, there wasn't a lot of that. Like we were always like content marketing based.
Yeah,
and that's always been our strongest suit, right? But back in the day, like 4 years ago, I could write a guest post for let's say like Niche Pursuits or someone like that. You know, Spencer's a really nice guy. And that guest post could generate us enough business where we're like profitable all month long, maybe even a couple of months.
Now
if I did that same thing, like that wouldn't even make us profitable for like a day because our expenses and our needs and what we need to attract have grown so significantly. So our old tried and true guest posting strategy, while it's still good, like my content team, I have them, they, two of them are just getting to the point now where I feel comfortable letting them go out and do guest posts.
Yeah.
So it's still something that we want done, but I have to focus on, you know, bigger things in terms of what I have to work on. But yeah, so the what we need to do in terms of marketing has changed quite a lot. So I'm looking for more scalability, you know, or more scalability or a way to tap into more high affluence markets easier. So those are the two things I'm always looking at, which can be quite difficult.
I think that's interesting though, because I think you can kind of start off with just one thing doing it really well. I think it's probably easier to just one thing, like you like just do content marketing, just doing guest posting and whatnot. I think it's way easier to start with that, but then it's interesting how eventually you're gonna have to kind of make that change and expand it. I think we talked about this before, that a lot of SEOs, guys in the industry, just very, very focused and reliant on one single thing, which is good, but it's risky also.
That's what creates the endless cycle. The SEO is dead post every update, like, internet marketing's over.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, from a buyer perspective, so someone comes to our marketplace and they want to buy a business, that's one thing they look at is like, is there diversity of traffic here? Because like what you just said, it is so much easier to just be good at one thing than to start expanding to other things. Like if I'm an SEO, why would I ever get into Facebook ads when I know SEO plus Amazon affiliate links work perfectly, right? Then a Google update happens and Amazon like cuts the commissions, and you're like, whoa, what? Like, there's a lot of risk when you're a one-trick pony like that. So my advice is always like, if you're building a real brand, once you get one thing set up good, hire someone to take over what you're doing, so it gives you enough time to make a bunch of mistakes learning the other thing. So right now I'm making a bunch of mistakes learning Google Ads, Facebook Ads, but through me learning those mistakes, I've learned a lot about analytics, which has led to much more productive conversations with the guy that helps me with the technical stuff, and we're able to grow. I think it's dangerous to be myopic of only one traffic source or only one revenue source.
I like that. So if, say, they're a solo affiliate sort of guy now that they're making some money from their own affiliate sites via SEO, your suggestion would be hire someone and train them, or just hire someone that's decent SEO to kind of take over the SEO stuff, or slowly at least?
Yeah, you know, it might not even be that much, that intense of what you have to do, because there are a lot of things in SEO, right? You can kind of partition off from each other. So you might have someone that does really good keyword research, or you might have an outsourced content agency, and maybe to make your content like stand out above the rest, you hire someone off of a subreddit within your niche that's really passionate about the niche, and they love it, and now you've got your managing editor there for all the content that's coming in around the content, or around the niche, right? So that can take care of like a large portion of it, especially with link building, a lot of it being, not automated is the wrong word, but like it's easy to scale link building sometimes with like Mailshake campaigns and stuff like that, depending on what you're doing. And that right there could free up enough time for you to start, which the next strategy I would tell people to do is start an email list, because that way you own your own traffic channel.
I'm huge on this.
I'm amazed that affiliates don't do that. There's two things on that. Like, I'm amazed affiliates don't do that because there's so many affiliate offers that are only available to you through email marketing. Like, they won't allow you to promote them in any other way because they don't want you to compete with them on the other channels, right?
Yeah.
So like that opens you up to brand new monetizations. It opens you up to bringing those people back to your website. And the other thing that surprises me is affiliates who do build that email list that go and sell their business. They're like, oh, I built this email list. It's going to add so much value. But it actually doesn't add any value at all because they never email their list. So it actually like hurt their business because they
would have made
more money if they just sent them to the affiliate offer. But yeah, so email is the next thing I would focus on. But yeah, it's just building of this big puzzle piece is all it is.
Yeah, I like that.
One piece at a time.
I know for me as well, when you start building a list, it's stupid, but this is the kind of feeling I had, and I think other people have the same thing, is like, I don't want to email my list because I don't want to like do to run fin, annoy them, and then get unsubscribes. So then you just build a list that gets bigger and bigger and bigger and has zero value. And if you ever do email them, you've never done it in like the first 6 months or whatever. So
they're like, who is this? Yeah. I'm much more of a fan of being the annoying emailer. Like, we send a ton of email at EF. In fact, we send too much. We're trying to minimize that.
What is too much?
It depends on where you are in the funnel. Because like, if you're unlocking a business and you're in a certain part of the funnel and you did something else, there's all these different triggers and stuff that will just send out a ton of emails. So we're trying to rein that in. But if you're on a running a simple email list, like, I would recommend emailing more than you think is okay. You'll get higher unsubscribes. But if your plan is to take your website and build a real brand, the people that stick around are going to absolutely love you. They're going to become evangelists because they're not annoyed. They want more, right? So that's the way I look at it. It's much better to over email than under email. And then you can self-correct from that over emailing by slowing down here. It's much better than never sending anything.
I agree with that. I've been sending email, actually, I haven't done it recently, but I was doing daily emails. So every single day, like some little tip or nugget or something with a pitch every single time. And so I did. And then if I was ever promoting something, it would be literally 5 or 6 emails in a day.
That's quite a bit. But yeah, I mean,
it's a bit too much sometimes, but the people that stuck on my email list were massive fans.
Yeah, for sure, man. Like, and that's how you can really build evangelism quick. And like I said, if it doesn't work, like, most likely the people that unsubscribe from you over emailing were probably going to unsubscribe anyways and not become a customer anyhow. So
yeah,
it's not like you're losing out from trying to over email to build that evangelism. And you can always back down once you have some data. So
let's make it actionable then. So if someone has an affiliate or some sort of site right now, obviously add an email opt-in, but do you have any kind of tips of what works really well and how to monetize that list better?
In terms of getting more opt-ins or using the list to make money?
One than the other.
Well, for the opt-in, like, there's no worse opt-in than just like subscribe here to get updates from us, right? It should be actionable. And we make this sin on EF. Like, if you go to our blog post, a lot of our opt-ins, like, sign up here to get the latest listings. And while that's a little bit better than like sign up to let me market to you, it's just like slightly better. So I would come up with like a good hook, some kind of lead magnet, obviously, that you can give away that's important to your niche. If you are one of those affiliates that don't know much about your niche, which is a lot of us, right, that we're operating in, to be honest.
True.
One way you can go and build such a lead magnet that your audience actually cares about is you go on Reddit or you go on Quora within the niche that you're in, and you just see what questions people are asking. What's the most popular question with the most answers? You can build a lead magnet around that idea, and I'm sure you'll start getting opt-ins from there. Far as emailing goes, to make money, I would treat your email, consider it like a premium newsletter, right? Your goal shouldn't be to sell. Your goal should be to help them. So I treat most of our emails very similar to a blog post on EF's blog. In fact, some of our emails have zero links. There's no way you can exit out of this email other than like going back into your inbox. I have nothing to sell you on.
Sure, yeah.
And that's what most of my emails are. So I'm a big fan of basically just value, value, value. And then every once in a while, I do a real hard pitch. Hey, let's go. Let's move on the offer or whatever. All those emails are also relevant based off where they are in the journey. So email has gotten so cool over the last few years, man. Like, so something we just did about, I think it was 8 months ago now. I had my team. I knew this could be done. It's one of those things, like, I know this can be done. I have no idea how to do it. So I got to get my technical guy to help me. So now when someone fills out a valuation on our valuation tool, if they're a content business, like an affiliate site owner, or they're e-commerce store owner, or they're a SaaS owner, when those three people go to the valuation tool, they get three completely different email funnels. I just
that makes
do
sense.
Segmentation.
Yeah.
And now I'm saying basically the same thing to all three of them. I'm just using their language, right? Yeah. Like SaaS people talk differently than affiliate SEOs, who talk different than e-commerce store owners usually. So I'm just using their world language. And the more you can do that kind of segmentation, the more powerful your emails will become as well. You can do that, I think, even with some of the smaller email softwares out there nowadays too. So
I think most of them are kind of doing it. It's actually really easy to set it up these days.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah.
So, and then you could take, depending on what you're doing, you can like take that audience in certain segments and then upload them to Facebook or whatever to do the retargeting of specific areas of the funnel. That's how, like, if someone hasn't filled out the evaluation tool, but I know that they have seller interest, because I can see they visited the seller site or whatever, I get them into the evaluation tool. Once they're in the evaluation tool, I can start doing a lot more hard retargeting to the next part of the funnel, which might be downloading our industry report. And once they're there, I can do like a 2-week retargeting, sell your business with us. If they don't do anything, I can just like market to them the idea of an exit planning call, all based off where I know they're in the funnel. I'm trying to speak to them as relevant as possible to where they're at.
I'm presuming your advice for someone starting off is keep it a little bit simple.
Don't do anything I just said. Right, go back to the puzzle pieces, you know? If you're just starting off, I was talking to a friend a while back ago about content marketing, and you know, he's a pretty successful Amazon FBA store owner, but he never has done anything with content marketing. So my advice to him was start with the bottom of the funnel, because the bottom of the funnel, depending on what you're selling, like if you're an affiliate SEO, the bottom, your funnel in general is pretty small, right?
Yeah.
But if you're selling like a service or maybe a more complicated product that would warrant having those multiple stages of a marketing funnel. So if you start at the bottom, that's all the buyer intent. And there's a finite amount of content that you can produce around that. And so all you really need is that initial email funnel with the opt-in, and then like say a month's worth of follow-up emails to sell them on that bottom stuff. Yeah. Once you have that set up, then you can start looking at doing the more complicated middle and top of funnel. And once you get that set up, you can go real crazy like we do, where there's like three parts in each part of our funnel.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. It's just, it's easy to look at the complicated stuff at the beginning and be like, yeah, no, I'm not gonna do that.
Yeah, the best way, like, you just map out all the complicated stuff, because most people think it's exciting if they're into online business.
Yeah, I love it, yeah.
And then you put it away, except for like just one isolated piece of it, and you go do that, and over time you'll color in that whole vision board of things you want created, right?
Yeah, so just like you mentioned at the beginning, except you're doing it yourself.
Yeah. it's cool to see the end picture in mind, but if you don't have like the little stuff, it can be so overwhelming, you'll just never start, right?
So yeah, I agree with that. So what is your strength or speciality?
What do you think it is, Daryl?
Content marketing.
I don't know. My emphasis has always been on content marketing, so like that's my favorite form of marketing, and I think it lives in every aspect of marketing. I was on a SaaS podcast the other day, and the guy asked me, "What do you think a brand new SaaS entrepreneur should do to grow their business?" And I told him, "Day one, content, create content. Now, day one, and even month six, that content probably will produce no actual revenue for you because it's not ranking, you don't have any traffic.
Yeah.
But what you can do is then go to your dream list of like 100 clients or whatever, call them up and try to sell them. And when they go to your blog or whatever and they see that content can actually work for you from day one using things that don't scale, right? They see this content that you created, they were just on a call with you, like, oh, this guy's an expert. So yeah, content just works in every aspect. So that's my favorite form.
Yeah, I agree with that. Or SEO is pretty much the same. So pretty much the same thing anyway.
Very similar, yeah.
So I'm trying to think of a question to get into this, but like I'm curious if you can start discussing kind of like content marketing strategies with people. Is content marketing still the biggest source of traffic or leads, should I say, for Empire Flippers?
Oh, hands down, yeah.
Yeah.
It's organic traffic followed by referral traffic. So
interesting.
And not all of it is just like classic content marketing. Some of it is like classic SEO. For example, we on our marketplace, I put this like pagination idea in there to where we have a drop down of what businesses you want to see, like affiliate site, e-commerce, or whatever. And when you click on that, now it goes to its own URL slug with like e-commerce businesses for sale, whatever. And just doing that change has sped our SEO up like way up. Like now we're ranking for like, I think one of the big terms was online business for sale. We're like ranked number one.
Nice.
Like that's a juicy keyword for us. So like content marketing is still, or organic traffic and inbound is our number one source of leads for everything. And that's what makes us so powerful. Because if you build an organization that is so inbound heavy, then it's very difficult, even for someone with a lot of money, to come in and compete against you, because you don't have the mind share like how the inbound person would have. So so classic content marketing, classic SEO. We are starting to get more into paid stuff, like I mentioned, but very, very small. Conferences, we go to a lot of conferences as well, but again, the content side of things helps us become leaders at the conferences. So
yeah, I like that. It ties in really nicely. Like for me, creating the blog led to connecting with people that I invited on the show, which led to getting invited to speak at conferences and all sort of stuff. It ties in really, really well.
Yeah. I was talking to, I forget who it was, but we were talking about like what you can do at a conference. And like, I was at a conference in the Philippines where I met a guy that used to work for Moz, really cool dude. He helped me get a guest post on Moz. And then I was at another conference here in Vietnam. I was sitting next to Tim Solo from Ahrefs, and he was like, hey, I didn't know Tim too well at this point. He's like, hey, did you see your blog post on Moz? So like, yeah, what about it? He's like, you haven't actually seen it, have you? I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, this is the third highest traffic post on their entire website, like, other than their like login page. I was like, what? I did not know that. He's like, I want you to write the same thing for me, but even better for the Ahrefs blog. It was funny because I was like, you know, it's funny, I actually used Ahrefs data when I was writing that blog post for Moz, but I like Moz probably wouldn't like it if I used that, so I'm going to delete that first.
That's pretty funny.
But yeah, so that one person I met at a conference that, you know, we had a couple beers or whatever, that led to that guest post opportunity, which led to the Ahrefs guest post opportunity. And between those two posts, they've probably flowered into 3 or 4 other opportunities and just keep snowballing from there.
So. That's funny. Actually, I have a guest post on Ahrefs, and the exact same reason, I was speaking at Chiang Mai, and it was the first time I've met Tim, and then Tim also was like, hey, this is really good. You should write this as a guest post for my site. Awesome. He's clearly good at that.
I love Tim. I have some Magic the Gathering cards I have to send him. He like bought them and like he couldn't ship them over to Singapore. Like, just ship it to Vietnam, man. Which was a mistake on my part, because it got like stuck at the cultural ministry for like propaganda or whatever. Here's the $30 Magic the Gathering cards.
That's cool, man. So what is your approach to content marketing with Empire Flippers? Like, what are you guys doing? Where does this traffic come from?
Yeah, so like I mentioned, mostly is organic. Some of our content isn't really built for organic though. So again, this goes back to content living in other parts of the funnel. So if our team, our other departments, like our sales team, our vetting team, they have issues that they come up to over and over again, we will try to solve that issue with content. So an example of this is if someone's buying a EU or a UK business that has VAT associated with it, most of our buyers are American and they have no idea what VAT is. So they're like, they find out towards the end of the process, like they hear VAT, they're like, yeah, whatever. And then they get to the part where they're about to buy them and they're like, whoa, wait a second. So we just solved that problem by creating a whole article explaining how VAT works and all that good stuff. And we put it up front. So we put it up on the listing page. And also when they unlock the listing, there's another FAQ section discussing VAT leading to the article. So that way they can know more about it before they get deeper into the sales process, where it's actually taking up our sales team,
that makes sense,
sales
yeah.
team's time to talk about it, right? So there's that kind of example. We did that with, I have a piece called Winning the Wire Race. It was one of the very first pieces I wrote for EF about how you can leave money as credit on file with us, so you can buy a business instantly. And that used to be an internal joke that we had, like, oh, this guy won the wire race, because it'd be two bank wires coming in, and the first one to come in gets the business, and the other guy's like, whoa, what the hell? I thought we had a deal, you know? So it was a very frustrating thing. And then I released that article, and no one's Googling that, right? Like, no one's Googling, how do I win the wire race? And if they are, they're not talking about what I'm talking about, right? So that blog post has led to hundreds of thousands, maybe even millions of dollars as credit on file for us at this point.
Wow.
Just as you know, 800 word piece of content. So that's one side of the strategy. The other side of the strategy is looking where is the company going. So like a year or two ago, we made a hard decision to go really hard into Amazon FBA and affiliate sites, of course, and we became the market leader on that. Now we want to go towards SaaS, and we also want to approach more institutional money. So now we need to start writing content about that. So we write about M&A brokerage, family offices, raising money from private equity, and then start appearing on SaaS podcasts or writing things on SaaS, so all that. And then the final prong of the content strategy is, what data do I have? So you look at, and this is actually something affiliate site owners could do too, because affiliate site owners, they usually only go surface level deep on the content. They never really dig deep, deep. And if you dig deep, deep, you can get just an open floodgate of backlinks when you publish this. So I look for what data is available, and then I turn that into actionable piece. So for example, our industry report, we analyzed 700 businesses that were bought and sold on our marketplace over a 3-year period to curate these trends. Now we looked at all the data just recently on, does niche even matter? You know, like people always say, what's the best niche to buy? And we always say, none. Like, they're all pretty good if it's already a profitable business usually. And that turned out to be true from the data. We just published that post and that was true. So that we were vindicated on that. But the more data posts you can do, the more powerful your content will be. And all the research that went into that data post, it's not like it's one and done. Because I can use all the like the data we just did. We interviewed 30 people who bought content sites from us, and to see how, if they made return on investment or not. And they did. I think it was like 63 or 64% either made their money back, stayed the same, or like very, very much made their money back, like tripled or sometimes even quadrupled the business that they bought, right?
That's awesome, yeah.
Yeah, so that took a long time. That took 3 months to create that report, because we had to go call everyone and get the data and, you know, analyze it and all that stuff. But now I can use that data in every single piece of content out there that I write. I can always refer back to that content that we created, that data. So it helps you become even bigger authority. And content sites can do that kind of stuff. Like, you know, if you, depending on the niche of what you're in, you can reach out to associations that are within that niche and say, hey, I have this idea, could you help me out? You could be my content partner. You know, I get X amount of traffic, it might bring more people to you. There's all sorts of cool things you can do that a lot of affiliate SEOs don't do.
Let me put you on the spot, because it'd be interesting to me. What would I do if at lionzeo.com, if I wanted to create some content, some data sort of thing, what sort of ideas could
So what I would do,
my work for me, man.
One thing you could do, I mean, you have a lot of agency owners still in your audience, right?
Yeah.
So what you could do is create this like massive survey. I actually have this idea for SaaS. I call it the SaaS hassle map. So you can create a similar thing for an agency hassle map, where you have the same set of questions that are either numerical answers they can give you, or like long form answers that you'd have to analyze later. But you want to look for all the troubles that they face as they grew the business, and then look for how they solved it. So like, what was your number one challenge? How did you fix it? And then if you ask that to 1,000 agencies, and they say number one challenge is getting clients, and the number one way was cold calling, which would be a surprise to everyone, I guess. and then you see number two way is cold emailing, and how they did it, all that stuff. You can start compiling all this information about the agency owner that made it, to figure out why did they make it. But also within that survey, you have people who didn't make it. So maybe in that challenge, like my challenge is getting clients, how did you solve it? I didn't. I tried X, Y, and Z, I couldn't do it. So like in our ROI report, we don't just talk about what made a business more money. We also talk about the reasons why it probably failed. Like, because there's some businesses that failed, right?
That's interesting, yeah.
Yeah, and like we wanted to see that. And sometimes the thing that made a business succeed was the same thing that made this business fail. So that's also interesting, right?
Yeah.
It's not a zero-sum game, but that's something you can do from a data piece, like digging deep into an agency's journey. Like we asked 1,000 agency owners, how did they build their six-figure business, or how did they not build their six-figure business, right?
Yeah.
And then you can create that as a downloadable report, and you can then take the highlights, turn it into an infographic, like a blog post on LionZeal, and on the blog post, say you want more information, join my email list, because Greg tells me I can market to you better on this.
Yeah, I like that. I think that's cool. And I think also we tend to only focus on why something works and not enough on why something doesn't work. So I think that's extra interesting.
Yeah, I think it's in Mexico. It's like a digital nomad club. It's like fucked up Sundays or something like that, where it's like you go on stage, you're like, this is what I messed up in my business this week. Just like
people
sharing like failures with each other. Yeah. You can learn a lot from stuff like that. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, a question I forgot to ask when we're on the email stuff is, and I can presume the answer, but these days everyone's always like, oh, email is dead. It's all social media, stupid crap like that. How effective is email for you guys? I know you put a lot of effort into your fancy sequences we're talking about.
Email is, it's impossible to measure for us how valuable it is.
Yeah, I figure, yeah.
It is incredibly valuable though, because it does so many different things for you on autopilot. Like, we operate in a business where trust is paramount, in an industry where there's a lot of smoke and mirrors. Like, it allows us to build transparency, nurture our audience, get them to trust us. Because like, when someone uses us, unless they're a repeat customer, this is like a very emotional decision, right? Like, I spent all this blood, sweat, and tears in building this business. I'm going to sell it. And even if it's only like a $100,000 business, to that person, it's their whole world. That's the most capital windfall they probably have ever gotten. So it's a very emotional decision when someone comes to sell with us. And likewise, when someone comes to buy from us, sometimes even more of an emotional decision, because they're sending us money for an unknown that they're not sure will work for them or not, right? At least the seller knows that their business worked. Right? Email does all that good stuff for us. It drives so many registrations, so many people looking at our business. I mean, I think last week we had 6 or 8 businesses submitted last week that came from our email sequences. Now, it wasn't just like a direct submit. They came from our email sequences, and then like 3 or 4 of them set up a call with our sales team who did exit planning with them, and then they submitted. But they would have never had set up a call if we didn't build up that trust, because no one wants to get on a call where you're about to get sold, right? So,
100%.
All the leads that our sales team gets comes from our email. They're all nurtured through different funnels until they finally get to the point where they basically in our CRM have raised their hands like, hey, you should give this guy a call. And when our sales team calls that person because of our email, it's not like, who is this? It's like, oh yeah, I love your guys' podcast, or I saw this conference you were at, or this blog post. You know, they're a fan, right?
Yeah.
So it's a very different kind of call than like an outbound call.
I'm curious how it all ties together. I know it's kind of messy, right? But like, if someone listens to a podcast, what sort of actions may or may not take next? Because I know it's kind of a complete mix, right?
And I think it was... must be about 2 years ago now, I was getting really deep into attribution. And this is like right around the stage I was coming out of being just like the blogger for the company. I was, you know, started doing bigger pictures kind of stuff. And I was like, I really want to figure out attribution. So I get my technical wizard with me, like, let's cast some spells, man. And we dive deep into attribution and came to the conclusion that it was completely useless. It was a long like month and a half or so of looking at that. It's not the thing that internet marketers want to hear, because like, we work in an industry where you can have so much precision data.
Yeah.
But for us, like, I could tell you our best customer, he listens to 10 blog posts, or listened to 10 podcasts, he read 5 blog posts, he came originally from organic media, and then he clicked on a Facebook ad and he interacted with 30 of our emails. And that is one person. What am I gonna do with that? You know, like, hey, I can make no actionable decisions on that. So how I tie it all together with this big complicated mess is I use ballpark marketing. So ballpark data. So if all of my traffic is of equal value, which of course we all know it's not, there's lower and higher quality traffic, but let's pretend everything is of equal quality, what would I ideally want that traffic to do? I want them to become a subscriber. I want them to become a lead, which means they gave us their phone number. I want them to become a marketing qualified lead, which means they've done a bunch of different engagement factors that makes me damn sure that I know that they know me before my sales team picks up the phone to call them. I want them to become a registered user, so someone who creates an Empire Flippers account so they can look at the marketplace. And then I want them to either unlock to look at a business or submit their business with us. So those are the KPIs. How can we increase the KPIs? If all of the traffic is relatively equal, let's get these KPIs up. These are the numbers that matter to us. And we don't look at attribution really beyond that anymore.
I like that. I think it makes sense, because it's just everything. With that said, though, how do you know if something is worth doing? So if you go speak at a conference and then the attribution is they clicked this Facebook ad and read all these blog posts and stuff. How do you know the conference actually made any difference whatsoever or is worth doing?
Yeah, that's a tough one too. Conferences are especially hard to track. So one thing is you can look at the early stage of the KPI, right? So if I say my subscriber, each subscriber to me is worth like $10 or $15 or say, I can see how many subscribers came from that conference directly based off different like, you know, pretty links I gave them. So I know that it's that conference. There's some way more advanced stuff you can do that's way beyond me. Like, there's like shit you can do in Google Analytics with like measurement protocol to like get better tracking on that, but yeah, I don't know how to do it. But yeah, so like you look at, okay, did I get a good bump in subscriber KPIs? Like, okay, I did okay. We had like 30 different people come from this conference to fill out our evaluation tool, which we can see because we set up a special URL when we're at the booth at the conference and helping someone go through the evaluation. So we always track that. Then we have like a bowl of like, you know, fishbowl of business cards. We usually give away a prize, and then we'll take all those people and add them up into the CRM, and we label them as that conference. So for example, we just did a conference with the white label, it's Amazon FBA conference. And this was like a few months ago, back when conferences were still a thing. But we just submitted, this guy, I think it was last week, he submitted a $3 million business with us, and we know he came from that conference because he had that tag in the CRM. Nice. So there's different things you can do. It's very imperfect, and which is again why I say, like, while attribution is an important thing to think about, don't lose sleep over it, because it's very easy to lose sleep over it and just get nothing done, because you'll never figure out like the holy grail of it. So a lot of gut instinct, but you can kind of measure it based off those KPIs and a few little tricks. So
yeah, I was just more curious, like if someone is kind of a smaller team and they're starting to expand things and they're trying to figure out, should I speak at this conference or should I start this podcast or whatever, it's kind of hard to say.
For starting a podcast or getting invited to speak at a conference, the answer should always be yes, in my opinion. Because like, podcasts, very low cost to set up, very easy. Like, you just need a good microphone, really, and like a way to record it. Like, we're in your studio shooting video here, and you have like three different lights, two cameras. Like, you don't need any of this.
No, not at all. Right?
I mean, it's so simple. And you can start talking with influential people almost from day one, because everyone wants to be on a podcast. It feeds their ego, right?
Yeah.
So that's a great way to build connections for very little money. And if you get invited to speak at a conference for free, like, yeah, you might have to buy the plane ticket, but it's almost always worth it, because when you're at the conference and you're speaking on the stage, and when you go out that night to like hang out with the people at the conference, people are looking at you as an authority and they want to present you with opportunities. So it just, magic happens when you do that. So those are like the two lowest cost things I would recommend a team to do for sure.
With the podcast, Finn, it's funny. Someone started a podcast recently, a friend of mine, and asked me about it, like, how do you get people on the show and stuff? And I told him exactly what you said, is that it's just ego, man. Everyone wants to come on and talk about themselves.
Yeah, right.
You say that as a guest on the show, right?
That's why I'm here, man. That's why I'm here. No, it's amazing to me that people don't do it, because like, there's this guy I follow. I won't say his name. He's a little bit of a LinkedIn influencer, and he got into e-commerce recently. He didn't ever used to be in it. He was more of a SaaS kind of marketer. And one of the things he says, like, if you don't know the market you're getting into, start a podcast about it, because that puts you in a position where you have to ask questions that are curious and that you don't know about because you're just getting into it. Yeah. But you get to ask these experts to explain to you. So you basically are doing marketing while having an expert teach you about the niche, right? So like, podcasts are a fantastic way to do that.
Would you do it if you're like, I guess the two types of people listening to this would be like agency owners or affiliates? Should they bother with a podcast or anything like that? Or should they just stick to creating content that ranks, which is what affiliates are doing mostly, I guess?
Yeah, I think it depends. So there's two different ways you can come at this. So we'll do the agency side first. If you're an agency, if you're serving just the local market, like your own geography, like I'm from Anchorage, I'm only helping businesses in Anchorage for the marketing, you could start a whole like small business podcast in Anchorage, Alaska, right? Like, you're never gonna be like the top of the iTunes charts or anything like that, but you don't need to be. That's not the goal of the podcast. you get to meet a bunch of different entrepreneurs now who are target markets for your business. How hard is it for like an SEO agency, like calling up this, I called like 20 dentists, you know, no one's talking to me. But if you get that dentist owner of the practice to come on your podcast, now it's a very different, you know, conversation, right? So there's that method. If you're doing if you're an agency owner in like just one vertical, say dentist, like across the whole nation or whatever, same thing, you can do a whole podcast on dental marketing, right? So there's that value and it'll create you as an authority again.
I like that, by the way. It's not just that people listen to it, even if no one listens to it, just the fact that you get in the same room as the business owners.
This is the thing a lot of people don't think about. They think like, oh, I need downloads, I need all this stuff, but there's all this soft power that comes with different things in marketing that people don't think about. And podcasts, one of the big soft powers is the connections you get to make.
It
puts people in a comfortable situation. It doesn't feel like you're selling to them. And at the end, like they like you, you like them, and they're more likely to hear you out on anything you say.
Absolutely.
from an affiliate perspective, I think if the affiliate should only do it when they have a website they want to turn into a real brand. So if they are just building like a sit and forget kind of website where they rank it, it's making like 10 grand a month, they don't touch it for like 3 or 4 months, they have no plan to make it into something bigger, it doesn't really make sense to do a podcast. But if you're planning on becoming a big media company, which is I recommend everyone to try to do, like we just sold a $3.5 million content site, and that is small to what is actually out there. A lot of SEO affiliates, like I was in this thread and like these SEO affiliates are like, no one can make that much money in affiliate SEO. Like you guys know Wirecutter exists, right?
Exactly.
Like, you know, they're a media company. And there's a company called space.com. They're just basically a display ad website but their content is about news about outer space. And they have like a radio show about outer space and all this stuff. They have sponsors on the radio show. So if you're an affiliate site owner, dream bigger, think about creating a media company. You can hire someone, maybe it's that person from the subreddit that you hired as your editing manager, who becomes your podcaster, who is now podcasting about your niche, bringing people in, experts to talk about it. And you can use the traffic from your content site and the email list to build up the podcast and vice versa. And now the podcast also offers another revenue stream through sponsorships that you get. The affiliate, by the way, they should never do the podcast themselves. They should always have the topic expert be that person.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Because if they go sell the business, like, you know, the person who buys the business can't be them, right? So it's always best to have like an employee to be the podcast person. So that's my answer. If you plan on going big, which I think everyone should, then you should do the podcast at some stage. Probably not in the beginning, though. In the beginning, it should just be rank a bunch of content, make good money, and then slowly get into the other stuff.
I like what you mentioned about becoming a media company. Can you kind of expand on what steps or what changes someone make if someone's already got an affiliate site, they're making decent-ish money, whatever that is, depends on the person, I guess. Yeah. 5-10 grand a month, whatever, I don't know. Then how do they kind of make that transition?
Yeah, so the first thing, like the most important thing in my opinion, is that it's a mindset shift. So if you want to build a media company, you're going to be making 1,000 different small decisions than if you're just building out like a thin affiliate site or even an authority site. So there's that. And the biggest mindset shift is when you're building an affiliate SEO site, it's basically a brochure. So you're walking down the street, I'm walking down the street, I hand you a brochure. There's two things you might do from that. You will look at the brochure and buy what I'm selling, and then you will throw it away. Or you will just look at it and throw it away. Either way, you're throwing away. You're not going to keep the brochure. It has no intrinsic value to you.
Yeah.
The difference between affiliate site SEO and a media company owner is the media company owner is building the magazine. I, walking down the street, I give you a magazine that you find interesting. You might subscribe to that magazine now. And there's a bunch of ads, there's things to buy in every issue, but you're interested in it. It has intrinsic value. So that is one of the main differences. You're building a website that people want to come back to, they want to interact with. There's this affiliate site I saw the other day. I can't give away the niche or anything, but it's definitely a multiple seven-figure website. And they have a thing where you can subscribe to their email and pay $5 per month, and they won't show any display ads on their content site. Like they built MRR into their content site. And I know that they're probably making probably 20, 30 grand a month just from that.
Yeah, yeah.
And that doesn't get rid of their affiliate links. It just gets rid of the display ads. So like that's a major mindset difference, is thinking about the customer. Not, you shouldn't even care about the offers that much, like the affiliate offers or the display ads, like those are important and everything. But the main thing is recognizing what the business model actually is. An affiliate site business model isn't to get people to click the affiliate link. The true business model is to build an addressable audience, nurture that audience, and then you can sell them anything you want that's related to that. But most people, they just think, I need to get people to click this affiliate link.
Do you start with that?
Yeah, so you start with that. Once you get up to where you think it's decent money, say it's at 5-10 grand a month, then you start expanding. So the next expansion is the email. Maybe you hire that editing manager, right? And you get the email on point. You just have this like crazy long follow-up that goes to all your best roundup articles and your value-driven articles, because you want to keep building that relationship the whole time with those people.
Yeah.
Then depending on the niche, if it can support it, consider selling like a $7 info product, something like that. And you can get the editor to be your product creator potentially if she or he is like passionate about the project. And you can sell that project for like $7. Say it was like, a $7 guide to some kind of leather making thing. And then inside of it, you're selling all the leather making tools as affiliate links. But they paid $7 to read your roundup review of the leather working tools. It doesn't have to be complicated. It should add a lot of value. But that is not, now you can start running like paid ads because you have this $7 lead magnet. Let's say it costs between $5 to $7 for each subscriber or to get someone to actually pay that. That means all of your leads are free that are now in your automated follow-up sequence. They're going through all of your other content. And now you can do the next step, which is to hire someone to do like video for you. Most SEOs would not do any video because they're way too shy or it's too technical or all that kind of stuff. They're like, it's just too much stuff, right? And they're not even into the niche. Like, why do they want to do it, right?
Yeah.
So you hire someone that is into the niche to do all the video for you. Now you can do all the affiliate review articles you do. You can get that product to that person's house. You can usually reach out to the manufacturer. If they know that you're going to do a video, they'll send it to you for free sometimes. And they can do an unboxing video. Now you have video content and all that stuff. And if that person is good on video, they're probably good on audio. So there's your podcast guy. So that's how you like slowly build up the machine. And of course, you should start with a very narrow niche, but with a brand that can grow into a lot of things. So maybe the first iteration of your website is just talking about red coffee makers, and that's it. But your website shouldn't be redcoffeemakers.com. Your website should be kitchenhero.com. So eventually you're talking about bread making machines, about microwaves, or all this different stuff all around the kitchen. Even though the first like 9 months, Kitchen Hero just had 150 articles about different red coffee makers, it doesn't mean it's always going to be that way, right?
Yeah.
So you can evolve over time.
Yeah, I like that. So you have kind of, even if you don't start that way, you have that kind of in mind of what it can grow into. Again, start complicated and start. Think complicated, then start simple.
Yeah, think complicated, start simple, exactly.
Yeah, so it's a good philosophy for approaching this.
And if you do this, like just having a good email list and having someone who does that video for you, you will destroy your competition because the other affiliates 100%. Are not going to do that. It's too much work in their head when it's not that much work once you get it down. It's, again, just accepting that it's going to be frustrating at the beginning, and then just like SEO was, and then eventually you're going to get it. Or the person you hire is going to get it, and you're off to the races. So
yeah, it's totally true as well that you don't have to do. I don't have to be on the camera doing this stuff. You don't have to do all this stuff yourself. Yeah. I do it with this because I like it and it's my niche. But you absolutely don't have to.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, you shouldn't unless it's a niche you are actually passionate about.
There's
just better people for it. So, but yeah, and like you don't even need to technically learn everything there is to know about like email or all this other stuff. Like, you just need to know enough to be like somewhat dangerous and like enough that you know the terms. So that way when you delegate it to someone, and like say if I delegated like Facebook ads and the guy was telling me about lookalike audiences, pixels, retargeting, pixel ladders, all this stuff, I'm like, whoa, yeah, that sounds right, you know? But like if I just spent the time learning what those terms meant, now I can, you know, use my own business acumen to understand whether this person is doing a good job for me or not. So you only need to know a bit of the terms of the lexicon of what you're doing to be able to delegate it well enough.
Yeah, I agree with that. If you just know kind of the basics of a lot of things, it's quite easy to manage and delegate things then.
Yeah, I mean, you should be able to see, you know, in like some kind of positive or negative progress over time anyways, but you're just going to be able to delegate much better if you at least understand the terms of what you're delegating. But yeah, that's the process of what I would do for growing from just an affiliate site into a real media company. And all that takes time, but like there are really big companies that have done this. So like Ezoic, AdThrive, and Mediavine, I think all three of them originally started off doing that, what I just described. So they created a content site that was so big, and then they created a few others that were so big, it warranted them to develop their own ad technology, which is now what lot of affiliates listening to this show use or want to use. So
I guess the second part to this, which kind of goes without saying, but is just going to come up anyway, is that someone's going to start that podcast, they're going to start creating the unboxing videos, they're going to publish it, and they're going to get like 10 views. And then they're going to be like, screw this, I make all my money from this other thing, why waste time on this?
Well, yeah, and that is almost going to be 100% of the people who do it. But that's the same way it was when you built your first SEO site. Like, I remember building an affiliate site way back in the day when exact match domains were like the hottest thing in the world. And back then you could use the Google Keyword Planner. And I made the mistake, I started DungeonsandDragonsBooks.com, you know, my hosting service, I couldn't figure out how to set up the hosting service. It took me like 4 days to set up this WordPress site.
Wow.
And I was really bad. I'm really still really bad with technical stuff. But the customer support guy is like, don't worry, we'll get this D&D site up. I'm right with you. I love rolling dice too. You know? at least I have my first fan of my website, you know? But I made this mistake where I didn't put the keyword, the exact match keyword, as exact match in Keyword Planner. So broadly, my keyword said I had like 56,000 searches a month. I was like, fuck, I'm going to make so much money. And I ranked number one for the keyword too eventually after like a month or so with this EMD. And I was getting like only 10 visitors like every other week, it seemed like. Like, what is going on? And then I realized my mistake, because I didn't put the exact match brackets, like it wasn't getting 56,000 searches a month, it was getting like 500 searches a month. So that was a very frustrating experience. I could have just stopped. Like, I wasted a lot of time, very little money, but I wasted a lot of time figuring it out. But that's just the way it is when you're starting something new. You're gonna trip a lot and break your leg a few times, and then next thing you know, you're running a marathon if you keep at it. And people are like, wow, man, I wish I was as good as you.
No, it's 100% true. It's like, same when I started this podcast and all that. It just starts kind of slow, but
yeah.
I didn't even know the podcast was any good. Like, you know, like I did the podcast for like a year, and then I just happened to go, I don't know, some meetup or something, and then everyone's approaching me saying, hey, man, I love your podcast. And that was the only time I realized that, oh, maybe this is actually worth doing.
That reminds me of, you might remember this, I wrote a blog post analyzing websites that sold on a marketplace with PBNs and without PBNs.
Yeah, yeah.
And it just blew up. I had like friends who were angry with me on both sides. Like the white hats were like, oh, you're giving too much credit to the PBNs. And my gray hat friends were like, you're ruining PBNs. I think everyone think it's scary, I sell PBN links. And like, I thought it was a very neutral piece, because like, I wasn't either for or against it. I was just like telling you the risk, and this is what might happen or it might not. You know, I had one of my friends, he was like, you're saying like 20% of these businesses fail with Grey Hat. Like, I'm also saying 80% of them succeed. Like what's the problem here, man? But that was my first time where I realized like, whoa, I actually have like some sway here in the internet marketing world. Was this blog post, getting all this like email from both SEO camps, so.
It's the same thing like the attribution thing you mentioned, and like, it's hard to tell with attribution, but when something like that happens, you realize like, wow, there's actually something going
on
there.
Still reading my stuff, yeah. Yeah, it's a good feeling. It's a good feeling in a lot of ways. So,
because there's a difference between traffic and an audience. You kind of mentioned the same thing. It's very hard to measure the audience side of things, I think.
It is. There's things you can do, of course, but a lot of it is just instinct and trusting what you're seeing is your audience, right? Like, this visitor's come back several times, downloaded my podcast several times, or whatever. So,
yeah.
There's just a point where you got to stop looking at the numbers and just start doing more stuff, right? Back to the attribution. 2 months of my life I'll never get back.
So what are you working on these days? I know you said Facebook ads, paid traffic, sort of stuff you get into now.
Yeah, so I'm in, I am taking like a 3 or 4 month intensive course on Facebook ads. So very intense, I've learned a lot. And then I took a course on Google Analytics because a lot of this all interplays with each other. So fixing a lot of data has been last month or so, or last month and a half that I've been working on to get ready to really start doing ads. I got my first ad campaign launched like a few days ago, or no, over a week ago now. But yeah, that's what I'm working on, is getting cleaner data, start going into new marketing channels. We have no conferences this year, so it's a good time for me to use the conference budget to really sink my teeth into paid media.
That's interesting. I'm curious how you go about learning a new skill. So you got into analytics, you got into Facebook ads, so you just go buy a course and start testing, connect with people. What is the...
Yeah, so I have a lot of friends who are like, I would never buy a course. Like, I just learn it myself. Like that's great, but I'm going to buy a course of someone that I know who has done it, because I'm learning, like, and this is a good pitch for your courses. if you buy a course from someone that you know is legit and has done what you want to do, then that is like the fastest way to learn. Like
I agree, but I'm super biased.
Yeah, of course, you're super biased. But I, as a fan of courses, I've learned almost 100% of my knowledge in marketing based around buying courses on it, or just obsessively reading blog posts about it. And I go to page 2, page 3 on Google for each keyword I want to learn about. So I'm not only am I reading all the top 10, which usually says the same thing because they all want to rank on Google, I'll go to page 2 and page 3 where they might be saying different things and learn what they have to say. I join groups, I ask questions. I take notes. So I always do everything I hear from a course or a book. I'll write everything down on a piece of paper, and then I'll transcribe it to like a digital, like Word doc or whatever. So that way I'm forced to do it twice. And also I'll stop in the middle of like a lesson. If someone's like, for example, on the Facebook ad course, she was talking about building your customer avatar and how you can do it. And she had a really good process for it. So I stopped the video, and not only did I write down how to do it, I went and actually did the exercise. Most people don't do the exercise.
not at all.
But it's very, very helpful, and it's work you have to do anyways. So why not stop and actually do the exercise as you learn of it? Don't be like, oh, I'll do that when I finish this next part of the course, because you're never going to do it. Like if you wait till the next part, that just means it's not going to get done in my book usually. So I try to be as proactive of a student as I can be. And yeah, I think courses are the best way.
Yeah, it's funny because I've done consultation calls with people that are in my course, and I show them some like spreadsheet or something that is also in my course.
What
and they're
is
like,
this?
Wow, this is so cool. Like, can I have a copy of this? Are you kidding me? It's just, yeah. And to be fair, I've done the same thing as well.
So me too. For sure, man. There's just too many things going on in life all the time, right?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that's my favorite way to learn is courses from people who have actually have done what you're buying the
that's
course.
That's the caveat. That yeah.
It's very easy to buy a course for someone who hasn't done anything they're talking about nowadays. So you want to vet the course creator as best as you can. So.
Do you have a process for that, or what you look at? Or?
Well, now I'm so connected in the industry, it's quite easy for me to know who is who. So if you want to buy a course on something, hit me up. I'll tell you who might have one. But
side affiliate business.
Back in the day, I used to get scammed all the time. So like, I was the guy that the predatory marketers absolutely love. You know, they had like the $2,000 course, I wouldn't teach you shit. But then they're like, would you rather go to college, or would you rather spend like a year's worth of Starbucks buying this course? $5 a day, is this how much you spend on Starbucks? You get a financial freedom. Like, yes, I want that. Get me out of the oil.
This stuff is so cheesy. But I have to laugh though, because sometimes I have the same in my pitch, because it just works annoyingly.
It works, man. Like, I was their target market, a desperate person wanting to get out of their old industry into this, right? It definitely works. I that hook line has sold me so many times, especially because I never believed in college. So when they say like, would you rather go to college? I'm like, no way. <You know? laughs> but yeah, so what I would do, I guess actionable advice, is look who the course creator is, try to find them on like LinkedIn or Facebook. See, do they seem to have a real social thing? Are they interacting with people, having a good time? Like, you see me on Facebook, I'm I'm always joking with people and stuff like that. I'm just being a real person. I'm not every post of mine is like this automated post trying to sell you something.
Yeah.
I very rarely sell anything on social media. I kind of just use it to nurture relationships with people. But yeah, so you look at that, look for, you know, on page 2, page 3 of Google, where the dead go, to see what they're talking about this person. Try to look up to see if they're still working at a company or not, too. Like, maybe they are working for a company. Like, I think it's Traffic Think Tank. They're a big SEO one. One of their guys, they work at HubSpot still. You know, like, that person must know something if they're working as, like, the head of SEO of HubSpot, right? Like,
yeah.
That's a good qualification, right? You have people like Diggity or you who are putting out all this content and just having real conversations with people. You're not like, this isn't a sales pitch for Lion Zeal, go buy it. but you know, like, you're just having real conversations. So look for not the guru, but for the educator is what I'd say. The person who is just always out there educating people.
Yeah, I like that. I agree with that. That's good.
Thank you.
Let's go back to the media company thing. I think that's the most interesting topic to me. And I think a lot of people that listen will get the most value out of that sort of idea. Obviously, you can't share any specific examples, but have you sold companies for Have you sold companies that have kind of made that pivot into like full-on media companies?
Yes. So usually they have not made that pivot when they come to sell with us, though. The buyer takes them to that
gotcha.
Next level.
Okay, that's so still interesting.
Yeah, so this is a, it doesn't happen as often as it used to, but I used to hear from sellers all the time saying, like, these buyers are so stupid. Like, they just go build this site from scratch. Whatever, I'll sell it to them for like 300K, 500K or whatever. And then the buyers are like, what is with these sellers? They have no idea what they have. They are missing out on all this opportunity. All right, because like the buyer will have all this other business acumen that the seller doesn't have.
Yeah.
And so it's an interesting meeting of two very different worlds. It doesn't happen as much anymore because a lot of our sellers have now turned into our buyers, funny enough, and they're doing media company stuff. But yeah, when a company comes to sell with us, like the $3.5 million business or another one that just sold for $1.2 million, the one that sold for $1.2 million, the company that bought that owns a site that does what I was telling you earlier, where they have a premium newsletter to get rid of the display ads on the site. So like these companies
awesome.
Know how to build up these content sites. And a lot of the times the person who built it from scratch doesn't. So they just think that there's this ceiling that they can't break through, which is that skill ceiling, you know? If they only focus on SEO and Amazon affiliate links, you're never going to get there. You have to expand. Right?
It's funny you say that because a lot of people are like, wow, who on earth is going to pay 35 times a monthly thing for this Amazon site or whatever that's already ranking? Like, I can't get any more traffic out of it.
Yeah, you can't get any better, right?
Yeah.
But like, and that's, a failure of understanding the actual business model. It's the addressable audience that they want. You own the audience, then you can send them an unlimited amount of offers. If you just lose the audience to an offer with an Amazon affiliate link, yeah, okay, you're right. There's nowhere else to go with this. But they're not, it's like in karate, you know, like the master of the karate thing. He's telling you to like chop the board, right? In order to chop through the board, they say like aim beyond the board. But all the affiliate SEOs, at least when they're first beginning, and even a lot of veteran friends that we have, they're just aiming at the board. They're never aiming underneath. So they never get to that next level. They don't see what's beyond. Right.
Do you think they should, or do you think maybe there's focus on what they're good at, you know?
Yeah, it really depends what you want. If you want to build a media company, like I know a company that sold, I would think it was 25 sites that for $172 million last year.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, you're probably not going to do that if you're just like, you know, the basic level SEO guy with the traditional tried and true formula. Now, if your goal is to make like 20, 40 grand a month, that is definitely possible using just like SEO traffic plus affiliate offer links.
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely possible. Mm. And maybe that's all you want and all you need, and that's fine. So it's not like one is better than the other, like so much in life. It all just kind of depends on what you want. So I think it would be really cool to build a media company. That's why I'm jazzed up on it. But for some other people, they're like, God, that sounds so hard. I don't want to do that.
No, it's true. Especially like living out in Saigon and stuff. A lot of guys here are super lifestyle focused. They can make 20, 30 grand for some affiliate sites. barely any work once it's already ranked and stuff. For sure. They're good.
Yeah, like that was the end of the story for that business for them.
Yeah.
But that's the like that's the reason why buyers buy those businesses, because the seller doesn't see what they have. So and it all works out in the end because the seller wouldn't have done anything like that anyways that the buyer was planning on doing. So it just comes out of what you want at the end of the day.
Yeah, I just find that topic very interesting, taking kind of, I don't want to say shitty sides.
Brochure sites. Brochure sites.
Yeah, brochure sites. And turn it into legit brands.
Yeah. I love the concept. I think there's just so much you can do when you do it. Like most SEO affiliates, they would love to do paid marketing, but there's just not enough margins usually in it,
right? An affiliate, yeah.
Yeah, so unless you're like really good at paid marketing, it's very difficult to make like just a straight up affiliate campaign using like ads work at a profitable rate. But if you own the audience, so you're sending the offer to with like email lists, et cetera, like say you know your email list produces X amount of dollars, now you can generate leads as long as you never go above that X amount of dollars with your email marketing automation. You don't even have to not use Amazon for that. Your email marketing automation just might send the traffic to your Amazon blog post, and you can calculate the money roughly from there. And now you can start gaining paid traffic to your Amazon affiliate site at a profit because you know your numbers. So, yeah.
Yeah, I like that. Is there people doing that by buying sites then focusing on making that kind of pivot with them?
Some do. It's usually a slow process, like most of the stuff. When someone buys a site from us, the first thing they usually do is do CRO, because that's the quickest way.
Yeah, it makes sense.
And they'll usually scale up articles quite quick. So they'll get a bunch of articles coming in to upload, to take advantage of the DR of the website. And once they get that like running smooth, then they might start going into email, and then Pinterest is usually the next one.
Pinterest, really?
Yeah, Pinterest. If you're in a visual niche, Pinterest is like super good traffic. Pinterest is probably the closest there is to SEO traffic in a social media style, because Pinterest, you can do the work once, and like SEO, you can reap the benefits of it over and over again.
Interesting.
Yeah, so it's the most SEO-like traffic out there, in my opinion. But then they might eventually get into doing something with paid ads and expanding their monetizations and stuff. You usually have to be a little bit creative when it comes to that stuff, like offering a $7 course that's filled with your affiliate links as well, as a way to like buy the subscriber, more or less. Like, you don't want to pay over this certain amount, and they self-liquidate themselves by buying that. But yeah, that's how you can start really snowballing an audience and do something much more major potentially down the road.
Yeah, it makes sense. Just start with the easy things. This is very logical. I didn't know about Pinterest though. I haven't even looked at Pinterest in years.
Pinterest is great, man. I don't know too much about it, so I can't like go hardcore into it.
Sure.
We're not in a visual niche. So like here's our listing number on Pinterest for business we're selling. But if you are in a visual niche, like gardening or even tech, you can do this in. There's a pretty voracious crowd of people on there, and you can use tools. I think there's one called Tailwind, I think it's called. You can set it up where it just like auto pins everything. And basically every new blog post, you set up the pin and it just keep going into ad infinitum for you. And yeah, some people get tens of thousands of visitors from Pinterest buying traffic too, and subscribers and leads and all that stuff. So
that's awesome. Do you have any examples of cool marketing things you've seen recently from sites for sale or people that have bought a site and then done some really cool stuff?
Yeah, well, the one I mentioned earlier with the premium newsletter, I think is cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Let's see, what else have I seen people do? I've seen some funny stuff that wasn't exactly like, didn't help them.
you can share that. That's good.
There was this guy, I think it was a drop shipping store. It sold this like a certain type of apparel. I can't give the actual niche away, but it had a very interesting like visual thing it did to dogs, weirdly enough. Like dogs were like would be obsessed with this thing. And the guy who took it over, it was like a 50 grand drop shipping business. And he didn't know how to run it at all. the thing that was fueling almost all the traffic was the fact that they were mentioned on, think it wasn't Business Insiders. It was something like Business Insiders. Yeah. BuzzFeed. It was BuzzFeed.
BuzzFeed.
So like almost all of his DR and traffic was coming from this viral article on BuzzFeed. And he went and came back and sold the business to us for like $4,000 more than what he bought it for. And he was so lucky because the BuzzFeed in the UK saw the success of the BuzzFeed article in the US and did their own version. That one went viral. So he got just very lucky, which is hilarious. And the person who ended up buying that business from us again, he actually sold the business again with us for like $120,000 or something like that. So he's able to scale up. We sold that business 4 times.
Does it happen a lot? That's kind of cool.
It doesn't happen that often, but yeah, that 4 times is the most I've ever seen. Yeah. So, but yeah, but sites come back to us now and again, sometimes much bigger. Some of the cool things I've seen, this is more common in e-commerce than in content, because e-commerce deals with inventory. A lot of sellers, that one reason they'll sell an e-commerce business is because they're sick of reinvesting all their profit into the growing inventory that they need, right, to keep up with demand. So they view it as like, I want to take some chips off the table and like cash out on this thing. So a buyer will come in, and if they're like well moneyed up, they can reach out to that manufacturer and basically get a gigantic discount by doing economies of scale, right, ordering a large amount of product at once. And that increases their margin sometimes by several percentage points. It's sometimes into the tune of like tens of thousands of dollars of difference. So that's something that they can do that a lot of sellers can't do, because they're just like barely holding on, reinvesting everything on this hamster wheel, you know? But yeah, there's a bunch of different cool things I've seen over the years. Internet is a crazy place.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think we've done quite a while. Were we at like an hour and 50 minutes? Is awesome.
Perfect.
Any final tips for, I guess, what agencies and affiliates is the main people listening? We covered a lot, but...
Yeah, I mean, I think agencies are great cash flow. Affiliates, I think affiliates have the skills to create those media companies like we talked about.
Yeah.
If you're an agency owner, I would start looking into getting into assets, whether you build them yourselves or you buy them. Because I think they're just really, really powerful. And if you're an agency, you already have a team that can kind of help you run those assets anyways, as you just treat it like a client, you know?
Yeah.
So that's what I would recommend, and start simple, but think complex.
It's a good motto for this.
Yeah.
I agree with that. I think if client stuff is awesome for cash flow, and once it's kind of smooth enough, you can launch your own sites or buy your own sites or whatever.
It's a great launching pad, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Where can people find you if they want to connect with you, bug you with questions, anything like that?
So if you want to connect with me, you can connect with me on Facebook or on LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn quite a bit nowadays, so you can do that, or you can just shoot me an email at greg@empireflippers.com.
Awesome, man. Thank you for joining me. It's awesome having you show.
Pleasure.
All right, hope you guys enjoyed the episode, and I'll see you guys in the next episode.